Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Recent storminess has been quite impressive in places like the Great Basin and the Four Corner States, and that has left snowpack greater than 150% of average in terms of that water equivalency in much of the Great Basin, as well as southern Utah, much of Arizona, and New Mexico.
Brad Rippey, a meteorologist with USDA.
So that's really good news because there are only two states in the western U.S. that have below average reservoir storage. One of those is New Mexico. The other is Washington State. Well, that above average snowpack in New Mexico will certainly help. It won't fill reservoirs, but it should improve low reservoir levels in that state. Also, good benefit for the reservoirs and for the water supply pretty much throughout the Southwest, the Great Basin, and much of the Intermountain West, in addition to California and the Sierra Nevada.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We're very happy today to release our Global Trade Outlook and Statistics report for April 2024.
Ralph Oso is chief economist at the World Trade Organization.
We expect a gradual recovery in world merchandise trade volume in 2024 and 2025, after a contraction in 2023 that was driven mostly by the lingering effects of high energy prices and inflation in advanced economies, particularly in Europe. Specifically, we expect merchandise trade to grow by 2.6% in 2024 and 3.3% in 2025, after falling by 1.2% in 2023. However, the presence of numerous downside risks has added to the uncertainty that is inherent in all economic forecasts, and especially trade forecasts. These include regional conflicts, geopolitical tensions, and economic policy uncertainty. In value terms, merchandise trade fell 5% in 2023 to $24.01 trillion, but the decline was mostly offset by a 9% increase in commercial services trade, which reached around $7.54 trillion. Total goods and services trade was only down 2%. While the trade environment is clearly challenging, we should not paint too dark a picture of international trade.
USA also looks at where the trade declines were the deepest.
Most of the trade volume decline between 2022 and 2023 was driven by Europe, which subtracted 1.7 percentage points from global import growth and reduced global export growth by 1.0 percentage points. Other industrialized regions also weighed on trade growth, but less so than Europe. Looking ahead, we expect all regions to make positive contributions to export and import growth in 2024.
Coleman Nee is a senior economist at the World Trade Organization.
I would like to draw your attention to the section of the report dealing with evidence of global value chain fragmentation. In this section, we document that bilateral trade between China and the United States grew 30% more slowly since 2018 than their trade with the rest of the world. Even so, bilateral trade in parts and components by region of major reporting countries, shown in the right panel above, has not changed much, suggesting that GVCs are evolving rather than collapsing.
Now, Barbara DeAndrea Adrian is a senior statistician with the WTO.
Services trade continued to expand rapidly in 2023, and this despite the decline of transport, which dropped 8% globally. Negative transport growth reflects the return of shipping rates to pre-pandemic levels. The attacks on the Red Sea shipping have reversed this downward trend. However, the impact of the recent disruptions on freight rates is moderate compared with pandemic peaks, and this is due to low demand. By contrast, the difficult economic context and geopolitical tensions have not affected consumer spending on travel, and this is benefiting both passenger transport and tourism, two sectors which were ravaged by the pandemic. Global exports of digitally delivered services reached $4.25 trillion in 2023, up 9% year-on-year, and accounting 13.8% of all exports of goods and services.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
It actually feels like day one, right?
Celebrating 10 years, CEO of United Ag, Kirti Mutatkar.
That is something I wanted to kind of bring back at United Ag, because it's been 10 years. We have done a lot in the 10 years that I've been here. We have actually tripled in size and then grown, right? But one of the things, as it's my 10th year, I've been thinking a lot about success and how do we define success and have we been successful in that definition. So when I think about success, I was thinking success would be, is it tripling in size? Is that successful? Yeah, that's a good thing, right? We've grown. We are the trade association for a health plan for agriculture now in California and Arizona. But is that really success? I would think success is when we've really achieved something, when our product is meeting the needs of our members, right? And so that's where I'm thinking a lot about and thinking through, have we met what are the needs of our members are? Do we understand the needs of our members at a deeper level? And what does that look like? And even if I look at it from that lens, we have achieved success. But at the same time, I want to go a little bit more deeper in the next couple of years and really meet the members where they need to be met. Sometimes as customers or members, you don't even, might not even understand what your needs are. And that's where I want to go next and build United Ag to the next couple of years, go down that path. So when you look at a health plan like United Ag and you think, the three different levels that you're looking at, right? First, you have to create a health plan that is financially sustainable. So we need to have a strong association with enough surplus, enough from a financial, already strong financials. And then you have to have, and when you're looking at employers or our member groups, make sure you provide a plan that's affordable and that is, really meets their employee needs. Right. And every year when you come in for renewal, you want to give steady increases. You cannot, not the double digit increases, because understanding how hard it is in agriculture, because our margins are very tight. How do you give sustainable increases so it's affordable for them on their income statement and it's not a big line item on the income statement? And in the end, are we meeting the needs of the end person, the patient or the member? And are we treating the member or patient the way you and I want to be treated if we go come across a health issue? So it's like a three-pronged approach, right? So you're looking at United Ag being financially sustainable, the employer groups getting a plan that's affordable, and the end patient being taken care of. And that's easier said than done. So how do you make sure this three-legged stool is balanced, right? And that's kind of the challenge we need to take on. And the next time we talk and I say, okay, we have some ideas and we've achieved this, I think that will be success to be. That's what I'm looking forward to. That's what I'm excited about. So it's when you really start off, when you really think about it, it does feel, or the way I'm approaching this now, the next couple of years, is if I would have inherited United Ag today and I would have stepped into this role, what would that look like? And let's start off from ground zero again, right? And that's what, after the annual conference that is coming up in 2 weeks for United Ag, that's where we want to focus our energies on.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I consider Lubbock the hub of the Cotton Belt.
Aaron Nelson is with the Texas Cotton Ginners Association. They recently held their annual meeting in Lubbock.
This is where this Texas Cotton Ginners Show needs to be. It's where the majority of our members are. It's where the majority of the cotton is. This is where we need to be.
Cotton farmers have been taking it on the chin for a few years, but so have Ginners.
You can't have 2 years like we just had and you just sail through that. If you added the last two crop years together, you don't get a average crop, you know. So when your membership's going through something like that, it's tough. We've lost some gins in the last couple of years, and we're going to lose, you know, that's a common question I get. How many gins are you going to lose this year? Well, I don't know the answer to that. I hope we can hold on to as many as possible Because when the time comes around again, Tony, when we have a crop again, if we're losing capacity, we're going to have a problem. We're going to be ginning 6 to 8 months if we're not careful. So we've tried to do some things through the state legislature this last year, worked with Cody Bessie and Plains Cotton Growers on that. We tried to secure some money that was set aside for COVID from the federal government. We weren't successful in doing so, but the government does offer some SBA loans, and this is a very difficult time for our membership. And I'm going to state the obvious here, hoping and praying for some timely rainfall in the next month and a half, because they're going to start planting up here in the West Texas area, about May 15th in through June. Sometimes it goes in June 15th, but sometime before that, maybe during that, we're going to have some rainfall to have a chance for this next year.
When you stop and look at where the industry has come over the past 20 years, it's pretty impressive.
Two things. I think the expansion of cotton out into the Texas Panhandle. Think about that. If we were here 15 years ago and I told you we were growing cotton out in north of Amarillo, what would you have thought? You know, it's like, we don't grow cotton out there. That was kind of unheard of back then. So that's one thing that's been quite different. And now they've been growing cotton long enough out there. They've educated themselves and they've figured out how to do it better. When you first start, there's a learning curve, right? Now they've kind of figured it out there. So when the conditions are right, we can grow a really nice crop out there. And I think one of the second big transformations in the ginning industry would be quite obvious. It's going from a rectangular module to the round module, and kind of the transformation of that, and how as cotton gins we've had to adapt to that process. We started wrapping these things in plastic, some of the problems that's caused with contamination, and we're still trying to figure out the best way to deal with that issue. You know, I wish there was some magic pill that we could take to keep that plastic out of the system, but it's, as you can imagine, it's a very difficult task to try to accomplish.
The industry can't afford to lose infrastructure like gins, and neither can rural communities.
I believe it is, because it's part of the economic impact to the state, right? So if we can grow cotton, think about the people that you bring to a cotton gin. You bring in workers to gin the crop. You bring in module truck drivers to transport the cotton. All the people that are associated with putting that crop, you know, getting it from the field to the gin, to the warehouse, to the end processing part of it, you know, where they're going to, you know, make the yarn, spin the yarn, and well, then it's got to go from there to make the shirt. Think about that total economic impact you got to go through from dirt to shirt, that's, I think, the best way to put it.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The 2022 ERP program that was announced basically towards the end of 2023.
Sean Wade is with Plains Cotton Growers.
There was a lot of concern about the procedures that the USDA determined that they would implement that program through with, you know, how payments were designated, how different payments were factored, in which, you know, different groups and how different groups are treated. And so that concern certainly has been percolating over the last few months. And as you say, we now do have somewhat of a response with the filing of a lawsuit on behalf of some Texas growers being represented by the Southeastern Legal Foundation. Basically, have filed a lawsuit challenging some of those decisions and how different groups are treated within that 2022 program. That suit was filed in March the 29th in the Federal District Court, I believe, up in Amarillo. And so now we're kind of just waiting to see how the court will respond to those suits and to that claim, and also to see if they will act on a motion that was also filed shortly thereafter for injunctive relief that would, you know, essentially kind of ask the USDA or cause the USDA to maybe halt implementation of that program, and then find a remedy to the concerns that were raised by the growers named in the lawsuit. So a pretty important topic, certainly one that a lot of folks, I think, are going to have a lot of interest in watching as it develops over the coming weeks and months, and kind of see how that proceeds. I think one of the longer term benefits, if we're successful in that suit, would be, you know, really I think maybe laying a much better groundwork for how these ad hoc disaster programs and you know, other types of programs are created, developed, and then implemented and delivered by USDA to ensure that producers are treated fair and equitably across the whole spectrum of producers. So pretty important, and we're just looking forward to seeing that information as it develops and, like I said, to see how the process plays out.
Former chairman of the House Ag Committee and farmer from Oklahoma, Frank Lucas, has seen this coming.
We started down this trail in 2021 with ERP and had great difficulty in delivering the program resources. So the secretary says that for 2022, we'll rewrite and we'll make it work better. I actually brought this to his attention in a hearing some time ago, that the way ERP was working was not functional. And always understand, I'm an old school ag economist. I'm an old school wheat and cattle guy from the 3rd District of Oklahoma. Resources should follow production, because farm bills are about raising food and fiber so that we can feed and clothe, take care of ourselves, and have a little extra to sell into the world market for cash. The secretary's perspective on this, or at least the language written for the 22 ERP, is much like the White House's perspective, which is dollars in the farm bill, dollars in the program, including ERP, should not follow production, but they should be allocated to you based on who you are and what you are producing. Or as they like to say up here, be socially responsible and environmentally responsible. That's maddening to me, Tony, because if you're taking money to address weather issues and conditions beyond a producer's control, but you're allocating it based on who the farmer is and what they're growing and how they're growing it, then that's defeating the whole purpose of the Farm Bill safety net since 1933.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We focus on the experience that our members go through, right?
Kirti Mutatkar is the CEO of United Ag, holding their annual meeting this week.
When we're looking at the speakers who we bring on, or the sessions we have, and even the topic of Connect, it is all a very thoughtful process because connecting it back to what I was saying earlier, it is about when you connect to people at a deeper level, you understand them, you understand their needs, and the power of connection is really important, right, from a business standpoint.
It's also an opportunity to highlight her Women's Leadership Academy.
That Leadership Academy to me is my heart and soul, actually, because it is one of the things that I noticed when I came into United Ag and in my role, to see that there was a need for having a community of women leaders who empower each other, and not the usual traditional kind of, I didn't want to go in that direction where we have leadership lessons and communication and how to come your presence and all the things that sometimes other leadership academies work on. Those are well and good, but the reason I wanted to start the Women Ag Academy was have a community where it's a forum where we openly share who we are, and bringing who we are and being comfortable with bringing that to the table and taking our leadership to our next level of being leaders by being true to who we are. Sometimes as women or sometimes as leaders, we try to be somebody else, right? Because we see that in the media. We see that around us. And what I have seen in the last couple of years of being in this position is when you're not true to who you are deep down, you are not going to be impactful. So I usually tell my women ag participants the story about me. When I first came into United Ag, I had the same feeling, right? You see a certain role image of a CEO, and you try to be that role, or you try to think this is what you're supposed to do, and you actually are not as impactful. But the minute you are who you are and you bring your true self to the table, you're actually a better leader. And that's the core of what we're trying to do to the academy, is to really take who we are and build on that. And that's how our leadership would shine. And that's the exciting part for me when I see everyone and we realize that we are all leaders, right, in our own ways. And there is no one leadership. There's not one size fits all, right? There's not, this is how a leader is supposed to be. There's not a supposed to be image out there. We all leaders. We can all be leaders by the things that we do every day. And what does that look like? And also having a forum where everyone is comfortable to share their stories and know that everybody out there is just there to help each other and empower each other and take each other to the next level. And there's no other agenda in there, right, except that. So that's the exciting and the energizing and inspiring part of being a Women Ag Leader Academy.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Yeah, I think it comes from a wholesome point of view.
Just because we've always done it that way doesn't mean we're feeding cattle correctly. Charles Eckel with Lissy and Eckel Feeds.
We want to do what is best for our livestock. We want to do what is best for ourselves. But there are so many different variables. There are so many different opinions in the nutritional side. And I think it's important to come back to the science side and what is truly necessary for an animal to survive, to flourish, to produce milk, muscle development. It all comes back to proper nutrition. And I think we often get off task with good intentions. And so for us, it is important to get us back in line to what really works, where the impact is. How can you feed better and feed less?
And as we start rebuilding the herd, says maybe we need to pay a little more attention to feed.
Well, when you pair a bull and a cow together, you want to make sure that pairing is successful. That's the Garden of Eden when it comes to a prosperous ranching operation. And when you look at the micros, the trace minerals, the vitamins in a feed, it is often the most overlooked and the most taken advantage of by the market. And so it is important for your pairings to work, and it is important for you to feed the micros that are necessary for that success rate.
That's a great example of something we've always done, but also a reason why to rethink that strategy.
Our intent is to provide the top-tier trace minerals, the top-tier vitamins, proteins, carbohydrates. When you look at a feed, when you look at the options that we have, they're often the same thing. It's made with good intentions, but dollar amount has to come into play. We want it to be as cheap as possible, but yet you still want the great blue sky in terms of the quality. And when you look at a tag and you realize that an oxide trace mineral that is a trace mineral block, it's less than 5% of bioavailable. That's less than 5% of that block is actually digested into the bloodstream. Well, now you've paid for 100% of that block, and you get 5% of the nutrients. It goes against what we were talking about on the bottom line. You want to be successful. Your profit loss, you want it to be right. You want your net profit to be as high as possible. You have to buy quality products, and you can't be led astray by what is popular or what we did in yesteryear. The quality has to be the main focus.
And says the company is in expansion mode.
We have six total stores: Hoth, George West, Hondo, Roosevelt, and Llano. And then we also have a new mill in Roswell, New Mexico. And from those stores, those are our hubs. That's where you come to really, in our region, you can come in there and we can support you. But then we do ranch direct out of our Poth mill and our Roswell location. So we expanded into New Mexico. We have been welcomed greatly into New Mexico, and we're very thankful for that opportunity. The people have been phenomenal. The market has been impressive. And so we can get to you as far east as Florida and as far west as California. You call us and we'll find a way to get it to you.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So far, veterinary officials are not putting mandatory quarantines around those dairies where some of the cows have contracted avian influenza. Dr. Rosemary Sifford with USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service says also right now there are no plans to depopulate cattle in herds with confirmed bird flu infections. And here's why.
So far, it appears that the cattle are able to recover after a couple of weeks, go back into the milking herd, and so at this point, we do not expect to need to depopulate cattle.
Dairy operators across the country are being asked to step up their biosecurity efforts and to watch their cows for symptoms of avian influenza.
The primary symptoms in dairy cattle are loss of appetite going off feed and then a dramatic drop in milk production. And some of the cattle occasionally showed a slight fever.
Gary Crawford, Washington.